Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Well, not quite John Rook yet. We're still working on that. He's in his basement somewhere. We're trying to get him on the line. I don't know. What's his deal, Doc? What's his Wednesday deal? How does he get that gig where he stays home?
It's a cushy gig.
Well, I know, but how do you get that?
It's kind of a big deal.
To who?
To me.
Oh. Anyway, we're inside the playbook. Rook will be here momentarily, we hope. But in the meantime, Eric Scalavino here from Patriots Football Weekly in my usual guest spot in the first hour of the Playbook show, doing what is known in the business nomenclature as a tap dance. Doc so graciously asked me to do in the meantime. We have a few other people coming up on the show today. Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential, that's sort of one of our counterpart in the New York Jets from PFW, Dan Leberfeld, and Roderick Boone, who writes for, covers the Jets and football for, I believe, Newsday, is what Doc told me earlier. This show is just completely falling apart. My headset I lost one of the ears of my headset just now. This is not a good start to the show today. Doc, I'm getting a ringing in my ear on this headset too. It's not a good day. But as usual, it's a Wednesday. We're looking forward to the Jets, but we know that a lot of you are still not quite over the Colts game yet. So if you want to talk about either the Jets or the Colts or both, go right ahead.
Steve in New Hampshire really wants to talk to you. You have time for his call?
You tell me. Do we have time?
All right, let's go to Steve in New Hampshire.
What's up, Steve?
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
I'm good, man. What's going on?
I did the breakdown of, the fourth quarter, and literally I just want to run it by you and see what you think here. And if you go, and this is just the Indy's possessions.
Yeah.
Pass, 19 yards. Pass, 11 yards. Run, 9 yards. Run, 8 yards. Pass, 29 yards. Touchdown. 2 minutes. Next possession, they had the pick. Not a big deal. We get the field goal out of it. Next possession, pass 12 yards, pass 6 yards, pass 9 yards, pass interference, 31 yards,
yep.
Pass 9 yards, a throwaway, run 4 yards, touchdown.
Yep.
Then we get into our situation where we couldn't convert and
right.
Bang, give it back. I mean, to me, Belichick just saw Peyton shredding us.
Well, yeah, I mean, for three quarters.
I mean, 6 minutes, they had 146 yards,
right.
34 running. They
right.
killed us.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. New England dominated that game for three and a half quarters.
Totally.
They dominated the game on both sides of the football. They were making Peyton look like they made Peyton look back in the early part of this decade.
Oh, God.
Where he couldn't get anything done. He was rushing his throws. He was off target. I mean, there's no excuse for the meltdown they had in the last 5 minutes.
Peyton got his mojo and was on fire.
He did. And
there was nothing minimal. He wasn't 2-3 anywhere.
And
he was 19, 9, 8, 12.
You know something, Steve? I have to give credit to the Colts fans because, you know, they were quiet for most of the game because, you know, realistically, what are they going to do? They can't cheer when their team is down
exactly
14,
right.
17
yeah,
points.
Of the game,
but
like,
there were very, very, very few empty seats in Lucas Oil Stadium with 5 minutes to go, four and a half
so
minutes to go.
Why would you leave?
Well, you wouldn't.
I would hope our fans would feel the same way. I hate that when people leave because you just, I mean, when you get a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, I literally, like I think on Friday, told a buddy of mine, because I knew he was going hunting on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, are you staying up for the game? He goes, oh, I'm going to try. I go, well, don't forget, you're playing Peyton Manning, so 30 seconds at the end of the game can be 30 seconds at the end of a game.
Well, and we saw it in week one. We had Tom Brady. We were down by two touchdowns. We ended up winning on the strength of that. And there were very few people who left that game, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, it looked like with 4.5 minutes to go, they kicked the field goal to go up by 13. You think the game is over at that point. Regardless of whether it's Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, that's a pretty tall order to ask any quarterback to come back from in that short amount of time. But those people stayed there, and the place, you could really feel the momentum shifting after that when, as you just relayed to us, how they marched down the field in those big chunks.
And that's the thing that I don't think everybody's talking about, you know, whether it's Bill's decision this way, that way, up or down. I look at it as like, do people realize what Peyton actually did? I think most people just look at it as like, oh, you know, yeah, he was kind of hot. But do you realize the chunk of yards that this guy just shredded us for? It was like, to me, I had no problem with it. And I was kind of indifferent when it happened at the moment.
The first of the last two touchdowns, you mean?
No, I mean as far as the fourth and two.
Oh, okay.
It was like, you know, I didn't know what he was going to do and the timeouts, and all of a sudden we were going for it, and I went, okay, let's go. You know, I didn't think, oh, no, I didn't, you know, and had he punted, I would have felt the same way. I was like, okay, this is what we're doing.
Well, there were so many thoughts going through my mind, I'm sure everybody else's mind at the time. I mean, Andy and Paul and I were sitting at that end of the field in the press box. We were at about the goal line, in between the goal line and the 5-yard line was where our seats were.
Yeah.
So we had a pretty good vantage point of the entire play because it was that, you know, just a few yards away on that end zone there. And, you know, I turned to Andy, who was sitting right to my right, and I said, on the third down play, I said, if they don't get this play, they're going to lose the game. Because I assumed that they were going to punt the ball deep and Manning was going
to,
you know,
have to fight
a long drive. I said, they have to make this play. They didn't make it, and I turned to him and I said, they just lost the game. But then they came out, they had the whole confusion where the punt team ran out and then Brady was running off and then they came back on.
All right, let me ask you this, because, like, as far as, you know, we can only see so much on TV, but when you were looking down,
yep,
while those timeouts were being called,
mm-hmm,
what did you see happening? Did it look like total chaos as far as...
Well, no, it looked like they immediately, Chris Hansen and a couple of the other guys on the punt team started running out onto the field, and I said, you know, my thought was, okay, they're going to punt, and it's going to be a long drive. We're going to have to sit through a long drive. But then Brady went to the sideline. The punt team ran off, and I'm thinking, well, okay, maybe they're doing their, you know, give the Colts something to think about.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, because I caught Kevin Flock on whatever show last night, and you know, he had his reaction. Tom turned towards the sideline, and then Kevin Flock, you know, did that little hissy fit, jumped up and pumped his fist. He was pissed off.
Yeah.
And he just said, you know, well, I was frustrated because of the confusion that, you know.
Right.
And so I was just kind of wondering, your vantage point looking down, were you guys, felt like, no, they were just trying to.
Well, it looked like, my initial reaction was the punt team was coming on, and then somebody, whether it was Brady or Belichick or O'Brien or somebody, decided, wait a minute, let's think this over, and they had to hurry up and call the timeout because they weren't sure what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
It also, my first thought was not that they were going to go for it, was that they were going to give the Colts something to think about for a few minutes.
Which part of me, I think, initially, I kind of thought that too.
And then they came back out in the field, and I said to Andy and Paul, I said, is this going to be another one of these Brady QB sneaks? And then he dropped back into the shotgun, and Falk ran out, and there was no backs. So obviously we were thinking, all right, well, it's not going to be a QB sneak unless he, you know, ran from the shotgun, which would have been ridiculous.
Right.
So then the other thought that crossed my mind really quickly was, he's going to quick kick this ball, like John Elway used to do.
Yeah.
Because they had nobody back there.
Not coming through that door.
No, but a quick kick, kicking it downfield would have at least...
Actually, would have been cool, actually.
Well, and he's done it before. Brady has quick kicked before. I think it was in his... Was it in the second year? Maybe.
Did he really?
I'm pretty sure I've seen him do it once. I know Castle did it last year, but
right, yep.
But I think Brady has done it once before, because I remember I seem to remember them making a John Elway comparison during the show.
Anyway,
it was all these things were going through my head within a matter of seconds as I was watching this thing unfold. And then when they ran it, I thought, I mean, I was stunned that they ran it, but then I thought they were going to make the play.
Yeah.
And then they did. But
I honestly, God, had no fear. I figured, regardless, that's
I actually had hope.
Yeah.
I actually had more hope when they went for it. I had more hope than when the punt team was going to come out because I thought, well, at least the ball's in Brady's hands. And
even after the situation, I literally said to myself, I go, well, you know how people argue now, well, it's, you know, it could have been 65, 70 yards. I'm sitting there going,
yeah,
screw that. The defense, 30 yards.
Yeah.
Stop them. Doesn't matter, you know.
Well,
they stopped us. We had four downs. We couldn't convert. Why can't we do the same thing to them, you know?
I hear you. I hear you. I know.
I don't think 30. You know what I mean? We were stuck on the 28. So it's like everybody can argue any which way they're going to kick out of it. But I didn't have a problem with it. But, I watched him shredding us in that fourth quarter, and that was what was driving me nuts. I'm like, the whole game we had them.
Right.
I mean, 6 minutes left in the game, and all of a sudden he was shredding us. And I know, part of me, I just think definitely there's no doubt without Ty Warren in there, you know, the injuries that we had going on, no Jarvis Green, and all of a sudden we lose Mankiewicz and Tully.
Yep.
It was like, boy, you know, well, we have no pass rush whatsoever.
Well,
we're totally relying on our secondary, and who's the best at it, and all of a sudden he's at the hottest point of his game. It's like, oh, we're in trouble, and I think Bill knew that. I don't know if you caught Charlie Weiss's little thing on ESPN, but he kind of joked. He goes, oh, this is kind of cool. It takes the weight off my shoulders for a day.
Yeah, for a day.
Yeah.
Not going to be long.
Yeah, I know that. But
all right, Stevie.
All right, man.
Appreciate the call.
Oh, yeah, you know what? And just let Fred know that Lawrence Maroney getting 100 yards this week.
Yeah.
The only way he's going to do it is if he's on the high school track at Foxborough.
Come on now.
This is my gut feeling. I don't see it happening.
Well, as long as they win, Sammy Morris was back at practice today for the second straight day. So hopefully they'll be a little bit more power at the running position.
Yeah, I was about more of an injury update with these guys, Matt Light, and so Sammy's been there 2 days.
Yes, he has, and so has Matt Light. So I'll go through the whole injury report thing when we get John on the phone. I think he's on. I think he's hooked up again now.
All right, sweet.
All right, Steve.
All right, Eric.
Thanks for the call.
See you later.
So, John, how's the basement today?
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Problem is that, we just had a couple of squirrels, I guess, eat into the lines here. That's all.
Really? You do live deep in the woods down there, don't you?
Actually, no. I'm right in the middle of suburbia, pal. So.
Not anymore? Really? No, I thought you lived down in the woods.
No, not down in the piney woods. Nope. Just regular old, good old, East Providence, Rhode Island.
Don't be jealous that I've been chatting online with babes all day.
Have you really?
No, not all day. Not all day. Just only part of the day. So why don't you, Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential is going to join us here in a couple of moments.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you bring us up to date on the practice report and some of the injury stuff that you were just talking about with Steve there.
Yeah, a lot of guys missing today, John, and not too surprising in most cases because we saw, as Steve said at the end of the call, we saw a lot of guys get hurt in that game. But I'll go numerically for you, starting at the bottom of the roster. Fred Taylor, Rob Ninkovich, who was hurt in the game the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Guyton, which was a little bit of a surprise, was not there.
Hmm.
Steve Neal got hurt in the game. Randy Moss, it's Wednesday. He doesn't usually practice now, it seems, on Wednesdays. Sam Aiken, Ty Warren, Tully Bantakane, who also got hurt against the Colts, and Jarvis Green, who's had the knee that he's been out with the last couple of weeks. So,
wow.
Nine players total.
That's
not out there for the start of practice. Pretty much, I mean, I'm willing to bet it's only eight because Moss will probably be back tomorrow. But so that means good news. As I said, Sammy Morris and Matt Light both have been back on the practice field 2 days in a row now. Practices in a row.
Well, that's certainly
so. Maybe that's somewhat encouraging news.
Yeah, I would think so, especially with Fred's concern. I mean,
Sammy.
Sammy. Okay.
That was my bad.
Okay, no problem. Are we still a couple of weeks away then, potentially, from Fred? From all indications.
I haven't heard word one about Taylor in – it's been several weeks, so I don't know. The only hope I hold out is that they haven't placed him on IR yet, so he's going to come back at some point, it seems to me. But we haven't seen or heard from him at all. We're more encouraged by what we see out of Morris at this point.
Okay. All right, very good. All right, Doc just tells me that Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential is going to join us at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, so, apparently Rex Ryan's running a little behind. He must have been bawling his eyes out or something. And
Sexy Rex, he's a little behind today, is he?
Mm-hmm.
Well, can't say that that's a real shock and surprise, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did you make of the whole, you know, crying in front of his team issue? Did you read about that?
I saw that, yep.
What do you make of that?
I mean, it's kind of hard to... Obviously, none of us was there, but I don't know. I mean, it's an emotional game. I've seen players cry over wins. I've seen players cry over losses. And, you know, coaches are human, too. I assume that they have, you know, they take these games as seriously as the players do and as a lot of fans do. You know, it's not what you typically expect from a leader. But, you know, if the situation he found himself in called for that and that's how he felt, I don't know. I don't really know enough about it to make a judgment on it,
mm-hmm.
Honestly. I mean, if all I can say is football is an emotional game, and these things happen sometimes. I can't say too much more about it than that.
Hmm. Well, you know, other than the fact that, you know, I think we all realize that here's a guy that's known for, you know, his pomp and circumstance, for being somewhat blustery,
yep.
Certainly in his old man's mold.
Right.
The stunt that he pulled off before, you know, the week two game with, you know, calling the fan, you know, the season ticket holders.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I mean, I think it's great if the guy's got, you know, true emotion and true feelings for his team, and, you know, and for his players. But I mean, does anybody think that this is, you know, just another ploy here to try to motivate somebody in some warped kind of way? I mean, I do. That's the first thing I thought of with the guy.
Maybe. It's just, I would hate to think that even a guy like Rex Ryan, who I really don't really have much, respect for as a coach at this point, I would hate to think that every move that somebody makes has to be looked at suspiciously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that there are ulterior motives to everything that somebody in the public eye does. Sometimes there are genuine things that happen. I don't know if this was one or not. I'm just saying, I wouldn't necessarily fault him for doing this if that's how we really felt. I don't know how we really felt. I don't know, you know, what led him to do it or anything. I didn't. Again, it's really a tough call, because when you're that close to a situation, it's I mean, you should have seen some of the players. I'll give you an example. Right after the game in Indianapolis this week,
yep.
That locker room, you could hear a pin drop in there. And all the guys were, you know, trying to get changed to get on the bus and get back on the plane for us to get home. A swarm of reporters gathered near Kevin Falk's locker. And when he turned and saw that all these people were converging on him, his immediate thing was he waved to us, like to wave us away,
mm-hmm.
and shook his head and said, "Nope, not right now. Nope." And he's like, "I got to compose myself." So, I mean, in the heat of the moment, right after a loss like that, I totally understood what was going through Kevin Falk's mind. I can't talk right now. I need to compose myself because I'm going to be too emotional and I could say something that could hurt me. It could hurt my team. I need to gather my thoughts. I need to calm down a little bit. I need to mentally prepare for the questions that you're about to ask me. And I think if he hadn't done that, if you had seen his face, I think he might have been on the verge of breaking down. And even when he started to answer some of the questions, there were times, like there was one answer he had in particular where he said, somebody asked him after a few questions about the actual play and the loss and all that. They said, you know, despite the outcome of the game, you had a pretty good game statistically or individually. And he just looked at the person and said, "Look at my face right now. You tell me if that matters." I mean, that was raw emotion right there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and his voice was cracking as he said it. I can't do it justice because I'm not feeling the emotion he had. But his voice almost cracked at that point, and he looked like he was starting to well up just thinking about it. Like, it doesn't matter how good he played. His team just lost a ridiculously heartbreaking game.
Right.
And the first thing that he felt was grief. So if it's not like this never happens. So I don't know. I really don't know enough about what happened with Rex Ryan crying in front of his team to say whether or not he was being genuine or not. All I know is that there are moments when it is genuine, and I saw one of those the other day with Kevin Falk. And
yeah.
With some of the other players, too. A lot of the other players wouldn't talk at all because I think a lot of them knew that, you know, they could have said something in the heat of the moment that would have been would not have been good for them or the team. Mm-hmm. And I give a lot of credit to Falk and to Adalys Thomas and Lee Bodden and a lot of the guys who did talk despite having all that emotion inside them and knowing that they would have had to temper some of their answers to things.
That's got to be the
tough questions.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think, Eric, that a lot of fans don't realize is that, you know, certainly right after the heat of the battle and when you lose something as excruciating as what the Patriots lost on Sunday, a game that obviously they felt like they you know, should have won, you know, and then everybody wants immediate answers. You know, we're in this immediate gratification mm-hmm. world now where everybody mm-hmm. has to have, I need the answers now. Why did we lose? And you just have to realize that, you know, most humans aren't programmed to be able to spit that kind of thing out, you know, that quickly. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that, you know, Kevin, you know, said, hey, I need a moment to compose myself so I don't say something that would harm me or harm the team or yeah. what have you. He recognizes the fact that, you know what, we're all, you know, we all, you know, commit foibles here, and I don't want to do something that I might regret later because right. you're running on raw emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of that happens in everyday life when we, you know, email each other from, you know, place to place, and it's kind of like, God, I really shouldn't have sent that, or they're going to misconstrue my meaning or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, it's good that they take the time to get people to understand what it is they're saying. You
right,
know,
right.
I mean, you know, just, you know, this is what I'm saying. This is the context in which I'm saying it. Take it for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, somebody could be flipping off the cuff and, you know, running on pure emotion and upset. And see, that's how I kind of picture, frankly, the New York Jets as being, as opposed to the Patriots, who have been very methodical and have been very media conscious about how they choose to. Well, certainly not only report, you know, news, but how they choose to tell us their feelings when we try to get inside their head. Now, frankly, I don't know that it does any good to try to get inside of somebody's head. I think that's kind of ridiculous. But you can certainly ask somebody their reaction to something that does occur.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this instance, that's what was transpiring here. And the fact that three or four players stood up to sort of speak for everybody else, I think speaks volumes about those particular players.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear where you're coming from. I hear you. I mean, I think the hardest thing for a player to do is have that, win or lose, I think the hardest thing to do is to have that instant analysis minutes after a game ends.
Right.
It's really difficult to take on, and more so for the team that loses, obviously, especially in a close emotional loss like we saw the other day, because there are so many unknowns at that point. You know, things happen so quickly on the field that sometimes you don't process them as properly as you do once you get to take a look at the film, see exactly what transpired on a certain play, whether or not, you know, like, because in the heat of the moment, Kevin Falk might have thought, oh, I clearly had the first down by a mile. Then you go back and look at the film, and yeah, it was closer than it looked or whatever. And in the heat of the moment, right after that loss, you're thinking one thing, and then later on you might go back and see that that wasn't the case, or it's just... You know, you're right about the instant gratification world and people wanting, you know, results and analysis and everything instantly.
And it's just not going to happen that way.
Well, it can happen that way, but it's not going to happen well that way all the time. I think you need distance and perspective, especially for big games like this, for it to truly be a meaningful analysis.
Well, I kind of alluded to that yesterday's show. I thought that we needed to have a little bit more distance between what happened on Sunday night and being able to truly grasp the meaning of what happened mm-hmm. and to not only get over the disappointment, I think, but to see where this all sort of falls in the greater scheme of things. I said that, you know, if we haven't already had it, and you and I talked about this earlier this year, we were talking about seminal moments in a season, you know, it's where, you know, a play or an event happens that makes the season turn around for either for better or for worse.
Right.
And ironically, I believe the one that we chose previously was the fourth down attempt against Atlanta, was
yeah.
it not?
It was. I believe so, yeah.
Okay. And so now, so just so happens that we have another fourth down play that apparently is
for
going
much
to be a rallying
stakes.
Point.
Much,
what's that?
For much bigger stakes.
Oh, no doubt. But it's going to serve as a rallying point for this team, or it's going to be the first in a series of, you know, excruciating mishaps that causes this team to fall flat on its face.
Well, John, I hope it's the former, because,
well, of course, we all do.
Well, because to me, the latter was the case in Super Bowl 42.
Mm-hmm.
From that point on, it seems like there's been nothing but bad luck hitting this team. In big games and big moments, and, you know, Brady going down to injury last year, and, you know, not being able to win these big games. That, you know, they go to Denver and have a lead at the end. They lose it earlier this year. They have the big lead against the Colts. They lose it. You know, falling short last year at 11-5, having Brady gone for the season. Ever since that Super Bowl loss, there's been a little bit of a run of bad luck when it comes to this team. Hopefully, this serves as the rallying point to turn things around.
Some would say that it's just luck evening out.
It could be that, too. It could certainly be that, too. I mean, what we're seeing now with the Patriots-Colts matchup is the inverse of what happened in the first 5 years of this decade.
Right.
Where the Patriots were the ones in Manning's head, and the Colts could never win, and it's just the opposite now.
Correct.
And it's, you know, it could be life balancing itself out there, but as far as just this season goes, I think you're right. This 4th-and-2 Colts game, I'd like to think it will serve as a rallying point. But what I've seen so far this year, I'm still skeptical that this team is a Super Bowl winning team. Hopefully, this will be the catalyst that turns it around for them. But I'm just not confident about them right now.
No doubt, I would share that. At this stage, I absolutely would share that. You know, I one of the things that we also talked about was yesterday was, you know, the ability for this team to put this loss behind them as best as possible, mm-hmm. which this team in the past has been able to do for the large part. That's one of the things I think that's made the Patriots, mm-hmm. is, you know, once they walked into the stadium today. Once they began their meetings and their game preparation and their film, you know, for preparing for the Jets, the Colts game is history. It's out the window. And this team's ability to focus from week to week, from game to game, has almost been legendary. And it's certainly been a big part of the legacy that this franchise has gone through. And so that's why, you know, I expect, and I think most everybody should expect, this team, you know, to have some real bounce-back capability. But I think we all realize that even things like this do come to an end. There's a finite end to a lot of this. And, you know, it'd be curious to see, and I think everybody should be curious to see, whether or not this team, because it's a little bit younger, there's not quite as much veteran leadership in the locker room as there used to be. Some of that vocal leadership is certainly gone. There's been transition in the coaching staff as well. This is not the same makeup as what we saw earlier this decade with Super Bowl teams.
No doubt. It's different. It's,
I mean, you
different.
Still have the coach, you still have the quarterback, you still have, you know, a couple of others.
Right, the core is there, but
the core was eaten away at this year.
Right.
You know, through Seymour's trade, through Bruschi's retirement, through Vrabel's trade, et cetera.
Right.
Rodney Harrison's retirement. So, it's not the same team. Even though people say, oh, it's the same Patriots. Mm-hmm. It's not the same Patriots. And so that's why this week is key for this franchise and for the philosophy, in my estimation, that Bill Belichick has instilled, you know, not only within this franchise, but certainly within that locker room, of how we take it one at a time, how we play it close to the vest, how we don't really say a lot. You know, we let our actions on the field speak for ourselves. You know, once we come into the locker room, we focus on the forward. We don't look back. All of this philosophy that has led to 3 Super Bowl championships and 4 Super Bowl appearances in 10 years, mm-hmm. under Coach Belichick, all of that is, in my estimation right now, it's on the line this week. Because if this team goes out and throws up a goose egg, or, you know, let's just, not a goose egg, but let's just say they throw out a flat effort,
yep.
against the Jets this week, and the Jets get a sweep.
Mm-hmm. They put themselves in a very, very difficult position.
They put themselves in a very difficult position. I'd be prepared to say, and I don't think this is being over dramatic, I'd be prepared to say that, the dynasty's over. Whatever is left of it anyway, it's over. And this team now needs to, you know, completely build from, you know, I don't know if they have to build from scratch. You don't ever have to do that as long as you got, you know, Brady and Belichick, I think. But I just think that it's a new era. Let's put it that way. It will be a new era. And you're going to have to find some way to have some kind of a fresh start in that new era rather than keeping, you know, continuing this tradition of, you know, what has transpired in this decade.
Well, I don't know if I'm willing to go that far with it if they lose the game, but I do think that it'll be tough to come back from that if they lose two in a row, especially get swept by the Jets. I'm just looking at this season's. I'm not really going to look too far ahead as to what
if they get swept by the Jets and they have New Orleans and Miami, you know, coming up.
It's not gonna bode well.
No. So should we say must win for Sunday?
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's, again, it's until you're mathematically eliminated or until you're in a mathematical elimination situation, I think saying anything's a must win is kind of silly. But frankly, you look at it, this is as must win as anything they've played this year for certain.
They really do. And I also think they have to beat New Orleans just to prove to themselves that they can beat a good team. Because in the last couple of years, they haven't been able to do that, John.
Right. I agree.
They haven't played well or won enough of those games against teams that are, I mean, look.
Especially away from home, Eric. Especially on the road.
Right. They've been competitive, but they haven't won the games.
But they haven't won anything.
And in order to be a championship team, you have to beat the good teams on the road. Like,
yes, you do.
You know, they had the AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh in, what was it, 03?
Yes.
And they manhandled the Steelers.
Right.
They went into that stadium, which is not an easy stadium to play in, and they handed it to the Steelers.
Right.
They have to start doing that in these regular season games to teams that are considered their equals or their superiors even in some cases.
Right.
To prove to themselves, to give themselves the confidence that they're a team that deserves to be in that elite category. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think the next two games are really must wins.
Well, certainly this one, and that's what we're going to end up trying to focus on at least a little bit for the rest of the program today. Your emails are obviously always welcome, as they always are, webradio@patriots.com, and the telephone number 508-543-7482. We will have Dan Lieberfeld from Jets Confidential coming up at the top of the next hour, and then Roderick Boone from New York Newsday newspaper. He will join us at the bottom of the next hour as well as we jump into Jets Week at Gillette, and we'll get to that coming up inside the playbook.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriots season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Wednesday here on American Airlines, Patriots.com radio. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. Again, Dan Lieberfeld from Jets Confidential will join us at the top of the hour, and then Roderick Boone from Newsday at the bottom of the next hour as we start looking at the New York Jets again. I wonder, Eric, if, you get the sense from the guys when you were, this little time you've been in practice, coming back with them, Sunday night or whatever. Do they seem to you to be ready to kind of let this go, even though it was such a great disappointment?
I think so. I think they're tired of talking about it, tired of thinking about it, tired of hearing about it. I think they are ready to put it aside, at least publicly. Tom Brady said something after the game that I thought was pretty revealing, in that I think he said, to lose a game the way we did last few minutes of the game, I'm paraphrasing somewhat, but
right.
The thrust of his point was, this is going to sit with us for a while.
Yeah.
So I think to the point you made earlier about it being a rallying point, they'll have this in the back of their minds for the rest of the season, because I think they know it's going to come back to haunt them in some way, whether it's playoff seeding or whatever.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, that if they can use it for motivation. Do you?
No, and I think it's healthy if they use it as motivation in that way. If they dwell on it and talk about and harp on it all the time, it's not a good thing. But if you tuck it away, save it for when it's appropriate, and use it internally, I think it's fine, and I think it's probably a good thing. But as far as this week goes and getting ready for the Jets, look, you can't overlook anybody in this league, especially a division opponent, and I think they know that. And I think they're ready to get back out on the field again. I think they were ready to get back out on the field, 5 minutes after the game ended on Sunday night. It's one of those things where when you know you beat yourself, you want to hurry up and get back out there and prove to yourself that wasn't, that's not really who you are. And I think that's kind of the feeling I got from some of them afterwards, was that they couldn't wait to get back out there again.
Gotcha.
So I think this, I feel bad for the Jets this week, because I don't think
no,
this
wait
is,
a second. No, 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 no. Hold on, hold
week.
On. I don't know a Patriots fan alive that feels sorry for the Jets any week.
Figure of speech. You know what I mean? I don't think they're going to have any mercy on the Jets.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing,
no.
Quite honestly.
No, I don't either.
I like that. Well, that's probably a good thing. I mean, I've already seen that a couple of national pundits have said Patriots probably can't wait to hang 60 on the Jets this week. Now, that may be a little bit extreme.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll get that much, but.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that, to me, I think that's a good sign, and if this team is able to win and go to 7-3 and open up a little bit more room somehow within the division, then they would certainly feel better about themselves, and then they can focus on trying to, reestablish themselves amongst the hierarchy in the NFL. They've got a chance again in 2 weeks when they take on the Saints.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's the one where I think, like I said before the break, I think that Saints game, assuming they get by the Jets and it's a win and they're 7-3 going into New Orleans, that's really going to be the bellwether for the rest of the season.
Right.
Because they're not going to face a team that good for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
That's the last major test of the season, as far as the regular season goes. If they can win that game, then you can look back at the season and say, okay, Denver, Indy, New Orleans, those were at the time the toughest games they faced. One out of two could have been two out of, one out of three, could have been two out of three, should have been probably two out of three at least. You have to have a little bit more confidence heading into the playoffs at that point.
Mm-hmm.
If not, if you go in winless against those big teams, I mean, it's kind of like last year when they were 11-5 and they just missed it. But if you look back on the season, they lost at home to the Steelers, the eventual Super Bowl champions. They lost, I'm trying to think of the other, let me break out the media guide here. If they had made the playoffs, they would have lost. Oh, San Diego was the other one on the road. They would have lost to good playoff teams in the AFC heading into the playoffs that season if they had made the playoffs last year. It would not have bode well for New England going into a playoffs knowing you were facing teams that you'd already lost to that season.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So
Going
into this year, I'm assuming the Broncos are going to make the playoffs. The Colts are definitely going to make the playoffs.
It appears they will. Frankly, I don't think in the West you can count out San Diego. They're charging hard.
No, that's true. I think the
Broncos are coming back to earth a little bit closer to what they originally were intended to be.
Yeah, maybe. Last year they lost to Pittsburgh. They lost to Indianapolis. They lost to San Diego. All those teams made the playoffs. And if you're going into the playoffs last year, I wouldn't have felt confident facing any of those teams because you know you'd already played them and lost to them.
Mm-hmm.
This year, if they go into the playoffs and Denver and Indy make the playoffs and New Orleans, then you know that, and if you've lost to all those teams, I'm not going to feel good about facing any of them again because you already have something to gauge how you are against these teams and you've lost all those games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for their own self-esteem, I think they really need to win the New Orleans game.
Yes. Yes, but before they get there, they've got to win this one first.
They have to win this one first.
Because if they don't win this one, I mean, that almost not that it renders it moot, but let's just say the importance of the following game against the Saints is for entirely different reasons.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I'm. All those comments were based on the premise that they had beaten the Jets already.
Right.
That they were going in 7-3.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Was there anything else in practice today that stood out other than obviously the absent bodies?
Just a minor note. Isaiah Stanback has changed numbers from 9 mm-hmm. to 15. I think that has to do with the fact that he's playing two positions and one of them is wide receiver. And he needed a number that could encompass both receiver, quarterback. I think. I don't really have any other
explanation. That's kind of funny because my son said that. We're watching the game.
Brian
and he goes, why is Isaiah Stanback 9?
He said he can't be nine.
Where's he nine? He's a receiver. He can't be nine.
Right.
I said, well, you can be basically anything you want nowadays in the NFL, just as long
Pretty
as you
much.
Fall within a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like it's actually not like 20 years ago where you had to have an 80 to play wide receiver.
Right.
Going back to the '40s with Paul.
Yeah. Well, not that far. not that far back, Bill. But
that's one of my favorite, by the way, quips that we have in that whole machine.
But yeah, I think that's why.
There you go, living on.
I think that's why he had to change the number. Although,
gotcha.
I've seen. Are there any receivers in the NFL now? All the receivers they have to have teens or 80s. I think that's.
Yeah,
I don't think
there are any other single digits.
No, isn't there a guy with 10?
Well, that's a.
Can that's a double digit.
Yeah, that double.
Yeah,
digit
it's
number.
A double digit. Single digits can still stay quarterback. Is still the domain of the quarterback?
Right.
Well, wasn't Isaiah Stanback though possibly the emergency third quarterback?
Well, he was listed on the roster as a quarterback.
Well, that's probably
on the
why
practice
he got
squad.
Nine.
That's why he was nine. He was a quarterback. The fact that he had played receiver before made him a valuable option when they had to call up this weekend. But that's why I think he had to change to 15 because now he's more of a receiver now than a quarterback.
Okay.
And he can still play either position with that number.
Absolutely can. Hey, we got Greg from Attleboro on the line. Greg, welcome inside the playbook.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
Good, yeah, I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I think that a lot of people seem to have written this team off. I think over the last 10 years, and even more so now, every team in the league gets up to play New England like no other team. I mean, even Indianapolis. And the way I look at it is, it took Denver overtime at home, a difficult place to win, everything they had to beat us. Brady never got the ball in overtime. The game the other night, I thought it was a good call. I would have gone for it. They wanted to get out of there with a win. Again, I think when January comes around, I don't think there's going to be anybody that wants to play New England.
Well, wait, Greg, hold on a second. What you said that sort of, you know, without any care there. You really, at the time, would have had no doubt but to go for it on that play?
I don't want to say no doubt, but, I mean, think about it. Even back when Parcells was coaching, he was one of the first guys you ever saw, like, you know, he'd have, say, the 50-yard line or whatever it was, and they needed that first down. And a lot of times they would go for it on fourth down. It was like cutting edge.
Near the 50.
No other teams were doing it back then.
Right, near the 50.
Yet still, though, I think that they wanted to get out of there with the win. They gave it all they got. You know, you got to look at it, I think, and I don't think it's a lack of really, I don't want to say confidence in the defense, but Manning had driven down the field like five times in a row. I mean, the guy was on fire, and I don't think any team would have stopped him. Nobody. I hope the Ravens beat him up this week. I know they got to play the Ravens, and I hope that we took a lot out of them, you know. But, again, I think, I don't know.
Well,
I would have put Vince Wilfork in the backfield.
What were you thinking? What were you thinking
the
at the time,
and
though?
Then put Welker and Moss in the slot.
Well,
and then you got, I would say, automatic first down. But
I suggested yesterday that Brady just should have run a sneak again.
Yeah, right. Line up, no huddle, third and two.
Spread
and
everybody out, five wide,
again,
empty,
you know?
Backfield.
Yep.
What were you thinking at the time, though, Greg, when you saw what was unfolding? Was your first thought that when they didn't make the third down, did you think they were going to punt? Right off the bat?
You know, I really didn't know, honestly. I honestly didn't think they were going to. I really thought that, knowing this team, the history, there's not a lot this team hasn't seen. I wasn't surprised one way or the other. I think the play selection, I think, and I might have called something a little different.
Did any part of you think that they were going to maybe quick kick the ball? Like an old Elway play?
I think the announcers had suggested that we were going to try to draw him offside.
Didn't have any timeouts, though, at that point.
No, you know, you're right. You're right about that. That's right. But the announcer did say that. And then, you know, I think everything. I mean, it's a tough place to win. It's loud up there. Everything's going so fast. I mean, Belichick, he's done what no other coach in New England has been able to do. I'm not ready to hang this guy yet, you know.
Nobody's hanging him. I think all we're doing here is we're merely pointing out that, you know, to a lot of people, and not everybody, we did a little bit of an unofficial poll here on the show yesterday,
yep,
whether or not you would have called the play or if you would have punted. And it was right down the middle.
Yeah.
It was 50-50.
Yeah.
So
go.
All we're pointing out here is that he made a choice. It didn't work out. Was it the wrong choice? Well, you'd have to say yes, because the play didn't work.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily make it a bad choice. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely, yeah. I think people were so stunned by it.
Yes.
Including myself.
That's right.
That, you know, people are finally starting to work it out. But again, I mean, one thing that's in all fairness to the team, and I'm going to approach it like a great fan would, let's bring on the Jets. Let's move on.
There you go. And
if it didn't work, we've got business to take care of.
That's
right. They want to move on, and they want to get up, you know. I don't know. I still got a good feeling about the team. I just don't. You know, I don't think it's over yet.
And it's funny, if it had worked, we would have been talking completely differently this week.
Oh, we would have been. Are you kidding me? Everybody'd be gloating and
sky high and through the roof and only one game out of the lead.
I think even Manning was as stunned as everybody else with that win.
I think you're right.
He really was. And I don't think it was the play call. I was just thinking how they came back was just, and we've seen that movie before up there.
Yeah.
You know?
Unfortunately, we have.
Yeah, unfortunately. I hate the Colts. Even more so now, you know.
Right.
But anyways, we'll see what happens Sunday. I hope that we, like somebody said, hang one on the Jets and score, you know, put up 60, you said. So I hope that's the case. I really do.
Thanks, Greg.
All
appreciate
right,
the call.
All right. Thank you.
You got it. 508-543-7482 is how you reach us by phone. Of course, the email address, webradio@patriots.com. A couple of emails to share quickly here, Eric. This one. Man, alive, I can't read names here. This one comes from David. And David says, look at the simple situation from a diehard Colts fan point of view. Would you like Manning to have the ball at his own 30 with over 2 minutes left, or Would you rather pray Tom Brady does not gain 2 yards in fourth and a yard and a half? He says, I would guess 80 to 90% of Colts fans would rather have the Pats punt and put the game in Peyton's hands. Well, of course they would. I bet Colts fans were panicking big
Absolutely.
Time when we went for the first down.
I think so, too. Like I said, my first thought was I turned to Andy, sitting next to me in the press box, and Paul, and said, they don't make this third down, they're going to lose the game.
That's exactly what I said to my son watching the game.
Yeah.
I said, this is it. This is the game right here.
The third
if
down.
If they don't make this, this game is over.
They lose. And then I saw Chris Hansen running on the field, and then I saw him stop and run back to the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And I had hope there for a second. I said, they're really going to go for this. I had a little bit of glimmer of hope, thinking that if they make the first down, then the game is over.
Right.
Because then they'll be able to run the clock or most of it out. And then at that point, if they don't get a first down, they would definitely punt it at that point, because then there'd only be a few seconds left, probably
right.
less than 30 seconds left at that point. And I don't think even Peyton Manning could lead a touchdown drive from 70 or 80 yards at that with
Correct.
That little amount of time.
Correct.
So I actually had I was more confident when they were going for it than if they would have had to punt. How crazy does that sound?
It's nuts.
But that's what was going through my head at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, as we all know, that's why it happened. Cueto, or I guess that's how he pronounces it, says, oh, this is Nate from Aggie Land. Oh, geez. All right, here
oh,
we
boy.
Go.
A&M
yeah,
and versus
And he says, we're taking little TU down this year.
Oh, geez.
Nate, in your flipping dreams, pal. Okay? In your flipping dreams. He says, John, though, you were so right. You warned Jets fans about how they hyped up the Week 2 game.
Oh, yeah.
They were so high up the nose of Ryan that they did not see your wisdom. Well done and good call. I think he's buttering me up.
yeah. Well, because he knows that the Aggies aren't going to put up any
oh,
kind
good
of a fight
Lord,
against
no.
Texas.
You kidding me? Texas might shut them out. That's how bad it'll be.
Yeah. You guys had another week off this week, I saw.
Well, sort of. Sort
My
of.
God. When are you going to play some
now,
real
hey,
games?
We can't get overconfident. Stop that kind of talk. I don't want that kind of talk around
oh,
me.
Please. You guys are going to run the table. Get
well,
to the bowl game.
You know, the funny thing is that, you know, in the Big 12 North, it doesn't seem like anybody wants the stinking division. The de facto championship for the Big 12 North is this weekend. Kansas State plays Nebraska.
Yeah.
And so the winner of that game is going
to
end up, you know, being, you know, cannon fodder for the Longhorns.
Right.
Part of me wants Nebraska because that sounds a little bit more, you know, big time, doesn't it?
Well,
with all due respect
of the history.
To Kansas State.
Yeah, because of the history that they have there.
Yes, because of the history of the programs.
Yeah.
Although I have to admit, you know, what they've been able to do at Kansas State is really nothing short of remarkable.
Sure.
So, guy coming back from being retired and yada, yada, and all mm-hmm. the stuff that they've done, I think that's really kind of remarkable. So it's a good feel-good story, but it's, you know, it will obviously end in another couple of weeks.
Yeah.
and I say
it
that.
Sure will.
You know, I just, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
No one's going to take down Texas.
You have to play the games.
I
you got to play the games.
I know. But
that's why we play them. Now, the better question is, Eric, as long as you got me on college football now, the better question is, Florida or Alabama?
That's a great question. I'm going to go with Alabama.
Me too. And the reason that I'm going with Alabama is because I really like Mark Ingram.
Me too.
I think he, right now, he's certainly the leader in the clubhouse for the Heisman.
Christina Acra. I
What's
want you
that?
To know that. You have both just very, very, very much upset Christina.
Well got to tell
I
the truth.
I don't like upsetting
tell
Christina.
Tell it like it is.
But we have to call it as it is. I mean,
right.
I don't like upsetting Christina.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Mark Ingram's the real deal, and
he
could
be,
he
is the
make
real
the difference.
And because Alabama can play a little bit more of a power game, and admittedly, Florida has struggled on offense the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And because of that, you know, I think that what Alabama presents on offense with more of a power running game and attacking, you know, a rather, you know, right at the middle of a pretty quick and talented Florida defense, I just think that matches up better for them.
Yeah, I think I like Julio Jones. I like that they have the running and passing threat on offense, whereas, you know, I think Florida relies way too much on Tebow to have everything go through him. And I like what's the linebacker, number 25, Alabama.
Don't ask me. I haven't started looking at him yet.
He's like 6'4", 260. Where's number 25?
Okay.
He's a beast of a linebacker.
So you're already in combine mode.
Yeah, well, I know. I have been since the opening week of the season, John.
See, that's what I
got
knew
started
you
early.
About
I got
job.
Started early on my
see,
combine.
See, I know that's why
year.
You love your job, because you're always in combine mode.
I really am.
You're looking for that next great thing.
Oh yeah, this guy's a beast. I think Alabama has the better defense, and I think they're a little bit more balanced on offense. And I don't know. I think they're going to pull the upset in the SEC championship. I mean, not much of an upset.
I kind of tend to agree with that. I think it'll end up being Texas Alabama. That's just my own.
And it'll be a hell of a game. I think
it'd be a great game. Either way, it's going to be a great game. But you know, I right now favor Alabama slightly just based on what's transpired over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. I guess my Boise State TCU dream is not going to happen this year.
Well, you realize now Boise State and TCU played last year in a bowl game. You knew that, right?
Yeah, but not for the title game.
No, they were in the San Diego Poinsettia Bowl. Or,
who the hell? Yeah, whatever.
But TCU won that game last year. So, you know, frankly, I'm a little disappointed. I would love to see the Frogs have a shot, but there's no way their strength of schedule is going to catch, you know, any of the others unless two of those three teams lose.
Right.
Which, in effect, would mean that basically, you know.
And I only do it, like I said, because I want the BCS people. I want to stick it to those people, you know, because I want logic and reason to prevail and to have a playoff system before I die.
This year though would be a great case for having a playoff system. I certainly will admit that, because you know, you could take the top 3 and then you'd have to include TCU and you have to include Cincinnati,
right,
and you'd have to include Boise. I mean, you could find 8 worthy candidates
easily,
very easily. In fact, you could just how many unbeatens do we have left? We have what, 7 or 8?
Well, you had the top 6 were unbeaten, right?
Okay, but I think there are still a couple of other teams that are unbeaten. And frankly, you got to look at the whole body of work.
Mm-hmm.
Just invite the teams that are unbeaten.
Well, but then, yeah, you at least got to have the top 8. You have to have at least the top 8.
And you realize, of course, it's never going to happen with the current bowl system in place.
Anything can happen, John.
It will never.
Anything can happen. Anything can ever happen. Oh, stop.
It won't.
No, I never thought the Patriots were going to win a Super Bowl either, and they did.
Eric, there's too much money. There's too much money in the bowls. And believe me, college football and the presidents especially of these universities, they like the fact that, you know, 50 or 60 teams or whatever it is can end up, you know, have a chance to end the season with a win.
Look,
they like that.
John, Obama's trying to take over health care. He took over the car industry. He could take
He's
over
not
college
over
football.
The BCS.
He's already said he wants a playoff system. He could take it over and force it to happen. You know, maybe then he'd be deserving of the Nobel Peace Prize.
He's a jackass.
I think he's got other things that he needs to concentrate on rather than the BCS, to be quite honest with you. So.
Well, yeah, so do I at this point. So I'm going to have to leave you.
Now you're going to be in the show for tomorrow, correct?
That looks that way. Yeah.
Is anybody co-hosting tomorrow?
I'm going to try to see if I can get someone to come in.
What does that mean?
Well, I haven't really worked on it yet.
We had a last-minute cancellation.
Yeah.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
So maybe the Scalavino 2 hours.
No, I'll definitely have to get some help.
You're in good hands, though. You have Mia Harris tomorrow from WFAN in New York, and you've got, you know, the one and only Yoo-Hoo Russell Baxter.
That's right. I know.
Yoo-hoo!
So it's always it's nice to have another voice too in the studio.
I agree. My apologies. I'll be winging my
way. Yeah, where are you going tomorrow?
I'm going south tomorrow. I actually have college basketball, not football, this weekend.
Oh, PC, where are we going?
Yes, and going down to Tuscaloosa.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
Alabama.
You got to do a little scouting of the football team while you're there.
I was thinking about it. Yeah.
You got to do something. Well, you get.
But not before I visit Dreamland Barbecue.
you don't want to scout on an empty stomach.
No, can't scout on an empty stomach.
No.
So, Eric, we did get another email from a female who said she's a big fan of the sweaters.
Oh, really?
You know this person, too.
I do? Okay. All right, I'll check it out later.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
Something to think about.
I guess.
All right.
So, check out, see if you can find anything out about the football team when you do.
I will.
The linebacker number 25.
I'll work on it.
I can't remember his name, but
we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that next week, because I know you're already in combine mode.
I am. And let's go Friars.
All right, buddy.
All right, man. I'll talk
thanks,
to you.
Thanks, thanks.
I'll talk to you.
Eric Scalavino, you got it. Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly, here in the playbook with us. We're going to take a break here at the top of the hour, and joining us in just a few moments, Dan Lieberfeld from Jets Confidential, followed by Roderick Boone from Newsday, all upcoming inside the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life, and you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast plan and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
It's hour two inside the playbook here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook, and let's get right to the fact that this is the 101st meeting all time between the Patriots and Jets. So if there ever was a rivalry in the AFC, in particular in the East Division, this would have to be it. The Jets, when they won 16-9 back in week two, took the lead in that overall series. 50 wins to 49 for the Patriots. There has been one tie. Dan Lieberfeld covers the Jets for Jets Confidential. He joined us here in the playbook. Hey, Dan, how's it going today?
Good, John. And how you doing?
Doing great. So Rex kept you guys a little busy today, or kept you waiting for stuff today? What happened?
Yeah, a little delay. I think that usually means the practice ran long because he wasn't happy with certain things. So his press conference started late and pushed the media schedule back a little bit.
Can you tell us, in your opinion, what was the whole issue about him shedding tears the other day?
Well, I just think he's a very emotional guy. He always has been. This has happened before. And it's not necessarily a sign of weakness. We all know how much Dick Vermeil used to cry
yes.
during his long, successful NFL coaching career. So I just think that there's a lot of pressure in this market. The team dug up to a 3-0 start. Maybe they raised the bar too high as far as people's expectations, and maybe to a certain degree the pressure got to him on Monday. But he made a joke of it today. He came in with a box of Kleenex to his press conference. So a pretty good way of handling it.
It sounds like it. Sounds like it was. You know, I think it's an interesting point you bring up, that maybe, you know, sights were set a little bit high when this team started out 3-0 and obviously had a big win over the Patriots in Week 2. But then again, this Jets team isn't the same team it was back in Week 2 either.
No, and I think the key to the Jets' win in Week 2 and I'm sure this is being written about a lot up in New England, is the fact that Wes Welker was out. Edelman did a real yeoman's job with a guy for a guy who was a college quarterback playing wide receiver and being like the focal point of the passing game because Randy Moss was being doubled. I just think that not having Welker, and obviously Joey Galloway was playing a lot back then, and he's not with the Patriots anymore. So I think that Tom Brady just didn't have enough people to throw to in that game. I think with Welker back, look how the Patriots have taken off since his return. So I think, to me, that's the biggest reason the Jets won the first game. That's the biggest difference in the matchup. But as Rex was quick to point out today, he didn't have Braylon Edwards. So he was, you know, Braylon had not been acquired in a trade yet. So when someone asked about Welker, he said, we didn't have Edwards. So he feels that evens it out a little bit.
I'm glad you brought up Edwards. How has his progress been? Is he a part of this team as you feel he should be at this stage?
Well, last week's game was really strange, the Jacksonville loss for the Jets. He didn't have one pass thrown to him in the first half, which was very strange because Jacksonville's secondary is very inconsistent and not one of the better ones in the league. And you would think you'd go to a receiver like Edwards a lot more than they did last week, especially because, you know, you basically, when you're playing Jacksonville, you stay away from the side of Rasheen Mathis. And they threw out Rasheen Mathis way too much. And they didn't look for Edwards enough, and I think that was one of the issues. But in the second half, he had a big play, but then he ran downfield and fumbled, and then he had the two-point conversion where he had the ball knocked out. So it wasn't a great game for him, but I think overall they're very excited to have him because he gives them that big receiver like Randy Moss that they haven't had probably since Al Toon left here. It's been so long. I can't remember the last – well, Keyshawn, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Keyshawn departed to Tampa. They haven't had that 6'3", 6'4", guy, and you could just tell Sanchez can throw the ball up to an area. This guy comes down with it. They haven't had that element for a long time, and I think he is so happy to be here. You know, he's the guy who likes the spotlight. He loves being in New York, and he really wanted to get out of Cleveland.
All right, so now you've got a potential big play receiver there. Curious he didn't get thrown to in the first half, but nevertheless, that is what it is. How has, you know, Sanchez, do you feel, how has he sort of ridden the waves of, you know, being a rookie in the NFL? How has he adapted? You know, does he seem to be improving, even though some games he's on and other games he's really not on?
You know, it's hard to see the improvement because, I mean, that doesn't mean he hasn't had a lot of great moments. But, for instance, during the bye week, he emphasized the fact that he needs to improve his completion percentage during the second half of the year. That's something that he needs to work on. And then he went out with 16 of 30, which is about a 50% deal as far as throwing the football. That's not very good. That's not going to win in the NFL. So, and if you look at last week's game against Jacksonville, there were a lot of inaccurate passes. And he says it's a footwork thing. During the bye week, he went out to work with his high school coach, who's a quarterback guru, Bob Johnson, out in the San Diego area. And Bob Johnson's the father of Rob Johnson, the former NFL quarterback, and he worked on the footwork, but that's obviously something that he's going to continue to have to improve because it has haunted him all year where he just has wide open guys and he's high or he's low or things of that nature. But the overall deal, I think I would say I'm very impressed with him, and I think you can tell with more seasoning and more experience, I think he has the it factor, and I think the Jets have their answer at quarterback for the next 10 to 15 years. You see enough positive signs that you get the sense that this guy is the answer.
I get, though, that there seems to be a little bit of a, I want to say a different direction being taken by, you know, what may be popular consensus as opposed to what the players are doing on the field. And by that I mean, Dan, that, you know, I read one of your pieces earlier this week where you had talked about the need for the Jets to stay away from Rasheen Mathis at corner for Jacksonville, and yet they didn't do that. In fact, one of the first passes, I guess it was, of the entire game was thrown his direction, and it was an interception. So why does it appear that everybody is not on the same page?
Well, I think one of the things is when your number one receiver comes to the team in the middle of the year, and I'm talking about Braylon Edwards, you know, that kind of throws things out of whack. He's still getting comfortable in the offense. He's still getting comfortable with the quarterback. But the thing is, the reason I was so critical of that play, you come out of a bye week. You know, you always expect teams, they always say Bill Belichick out of a bye week is impossible because you give him 2 weeks in the laboratory, he's going to come out with an unbelievable game plan. So for the Jets to come out on their first play on offense, they're throwing – Jericho Cotchery is a terrific player, but he's probably a 4'6", 40 guy, and he's not going to blow by anybody downfield. His thing is excellent route running, good intermediate receiver. So first play of the game, to be throwing way downfield to Jericho Cotchery, being covered by Rasheed Mathis, which means that Derek Cox, the rookie out of William & Mary, was on Braylon Edwards. So that's a colossal mismatch. It just didn't make any sense. And you have to criticize the offensive coordinator for calling the play, but you also have to criticize Sanchez when you see the matchup and you see no separation. Tuck the ball and run or throw it away. Don't persist on making that throw. It was just an awful play.
Is Brian Schottenheimer to blame then here? Is he not doing, in effect, maybe what either A, he should be doing, or B, what Rex Ryan is telling him to do?
Well, I just think that it's a rookie quarterback. I mentioned the accuracy issue.
Mm-hmm.
He's around 50% for the year, which is a big problem for an NFL offense. We all know the great quarterbacks, and even the good quarterbacks are around 60%. And you really need that in the NFL. 50% is a killer. The Jets' pass offense is I haven't seen this week's stats, but it was 27 last week. So it's not a high-ranked offense. I think some of the problem, Brian Schottenheimer is a pretty good offensive coordinator. The one complaint I would have would be that he's so into spreading the ball around that I think sometimes he doesn't play the hot hand. And I think sometimes you get too cute that way. Like I mentioned, Derek Cox, the rookie corner, middle-round pick out of a 1AA school, who I think is going to be good, but not only is he a rookie, he comes from a 1AA school, which is a colossal jump up in competition. You got to pick on him all day. And there were other plays. It wasn't just that first play, John, against Mathis.
Mm-hmm.
They threw a number of other plays that were near picks to him, so I don't know where they were coming from on that one.
Dan Lieberfeld, who covers the Jets for Jets Confidential, with us here inside Patriots Playbook. Let's flip it to the other side of the football. Obviously, there have been some significant injuries as well from week two, some losses in the defensive line. I know there have been some losses in the secondary. What happened to Lenhard? Thumb injury?
Yeah, he broke his thumb. It's in a cast. He's got a sling on his right arm, and it doesn't look promising. I mean, Rex Ryan said, hey, the guy has a sling on. I don't think it looks good for him to play, but he said he's a super tough player and he generally can play with things other guys can't play with. But that's a big loss against New England because he's the traffic cop of the secondary. He gets everyone lined up, and with all the chicanery and nuances of the New England offense, you kind of need your traffic cop back there. So I don't think he's going to play, but like Rex Ryan said, you can never rule this guy out. But if he doesn't play, that's a big loss because of all the great work he does lining people up.
I'm getting the impression that the Jets have their own version of the Patriots' Lawrence Maroney in a guy like Vernon Gulston. Is that accurate?
Well, I would say Maroney has done a lot more than Gulston.
Okay. Well, to people Gulston, here, Maroney has Gulston, done very little.
I know he's been he's received a lot of criticism, but based on what I've seen from this year, he's doing more than Gulston. And Gulston has a hamstring, and I don't think he's going to play this week. And I have a feeling this hamstring could linger for many weeks. I'll do a little wink-wink here because I think that he's just not getting the job done. So it's a good way to finesse the situation. I'm not saying he's not hurt, but it certainly pushes back the story about, hey, you're deactivating your first-round pick from last year. If they say he has a hamstring, they have to deal with that. I don't know what's going on there, but it looks like the Jets really missed on that one.
Okay. How long do they stay with that experiment?
Well, the thing is,
I know he's a high draft pick. He's obviously got money coming to him.
Yeah, he makes a lot of money, $21 million in guaranteed money in that contract. The thing about it is, I think when Rex Ryan got the job, I think he told the higher-ups here that if anyone gets through to him, I can, being the defensive whiz he is. But I don't know how long Rex is going to put up with this if the guy isn't producing and there are people like Jamal Westerman, the rookie out of Rutgers, and Marcus Morrell, who just look better in practice, who look better in training camp. And I thought that, that those guys should have been playing ahead of him earlier in the year, but it seems like they were putting him out there to try to justify the selection. And I don't know how long Rex is going to go along with that. I mean, the man has to win here. And at some point he might say, hey, guys, I'm talking about the GM and the owner, I can't go along with this anymore.
Okay. Health-wise, then, for this game, You mentioned already, obviously, some of the problems with Golston and the like, Lenhardt's thumb injury. Anybody else at your estimation that you think might not be able to go?
No, that's basically it. Obviously, they lost two very important players for them in Chris Jenkins, the massive nose tackle out for the year with a torn ACL,
right.
And Leon Washington, their all-purpose back, punt returner, kick returner, third down back. And like the Jets answer to Kevin Falk, he's out for the year with a broken leg, compound fracture. I'm sure you saw that highlight many
right.
times, a horrific
yeah.
injury. So you can make the argument that they lost their top offensive weapon and their most dominating defensive player. That's a lot to overcome. I think the rookie to keep an eye on, Sean Green, the third-round pick out of Iowa, really looks like the real deal at the running back spot. He's about 5'10", 230, very good quickness. He had a nice 14-yard run to the one-yard line last week, and the Jets scored on the next play. So he's filled the bill. But the thing about Sean Green is he's not a very good receiver. So when you're talking about replacing Leon Washington, he can't replace him in that regard. So I think they missed Leon. If you notice last week's game, they hardly threw to the backs at all. So that aspect of the offense where you throw to the back and he makes things happen in the flat, they haven't been as effective with that since Leon's injury.
Gotcha. Now, I also noticed, obviously, that some of the things that Rex had said earlier today, and that I think, we need to kind of begin, making sure everybody in New England knows as well, that if the Jets win this game, they're only a game out of first place, and they hold the tiebreaker in the division, having swept the Patriots. So I can only imagine that this is getting some pretty good hype within that Jets locker room as well about the opportunity that these guys have.
Yeah, I mean, a big angle this week is New England coming off the disappointing loss to Indianapolis. You don't want to play them because, they're going to be fired up and they're going to want to redeem themselves from last week. But I think they're facing a Jet team with a mindset like that for different reasons. They've lost four games by a total of 14 points, and they're getting attacked here in the New York media and Rex, with the crying and Mark Sanchez and, reading a statement after the game and the media didn't like that instead of addressing questions initially. All these things are being picked apart and people are questioning the Jets left and right. So they're gonna be just like the Patriots from the standpoint that they're going to go into this game angry and with an edge to them. So I think it's going to be a heck of a game. I think both teams will go into this game with the attitude that we can't lose this.
Sure. And I think that's what adds to the rivalry here, because it seems like no matter what the records are or, where these two teams are in their respective seasons, these guys play each other twice a year. They don't like each other for a lot of reasons, and fans probably feel the same way about the teams. And so it all makes for pretty good entertainment, pretty good show on Sundays.
Absolutely. With all the talk last week about how the Colts and Patriots is the top rivalry in the league, I was looking at the going, I don't know about that. I think this one is, this might be the top rivalry of the Patriots. I know the Colts and Patriots had some great games over the years and were two dominating teams over the last decade. I just think this is one of the best rivalries in modern NFL history. So I think it's right up there with the Colts and Patriots.
I can certainly understand, I think that, from a national perspective, why they would select the Colts and Patriots, just because of, the team's ultimate success at the end of the year. But within the division and within the AFC East, I couldn't agree more. Just offhand here, Dan, what was your take of Ralph Wilson relieving Dick Geron at Buffalo?
I think they needed to do something to energize that team, to revitalize that team, because that fourth quarter against Tennessee was very revealing, just how they fell apart. And, I don't know if Perry Fuel is going to be the long-term answer, but I just think, the thing about Dick Geron, and I thought he got a little bit of a bum rap because there were a lot of personnel mistakes up there. They got rid of Jason Peters, they traded him for Philly, and they really didn't have a replacement in left tackle. That's never going to work on offense with a right-handed quarterback when you don't have a left tackle. They picked the guy, Aaron Maven, in the first round who wasn't anywhere near ready to play, and they needed a pass rusher who could come in immediately and help them. So those are two issues right there. And the offensive line came into the season with two guards, rookie guards starting who had never played guard before. So you combine the left tackle thing with that, a free agent center, and to me, their offensive line has been the centerpiece of all their problems, and I can't blame Dick Geron for that. So I think we all believed it was inevitable that he was going to be gone, whether it was during the season or after the year. I don't think any of us believed he was going to be the coach of the Bills in 2010.
Has the AFC East increased in stature in terms of its strength from top to bottom?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think Buffalo is not a very good football team. Miami's problem is, you know, that Miami, I watched because the Jets were on the bye week, I watched the whole Miami-New England game.
Mm-hmm.
And Miami's a well-coached team, but they are devoid of weapons in the passing game, and that is killing them. And I'm surprised that Bill Parcells didn't address that more last offseason. He picked two receivers in the middle round, one guy, Patrick Turner, who doesn't even dress, and the other guy, Hartline from Ohio State, who's a marginal prospect, the number three receiver at best. So you look at them, they have nobody at tight end or wide receiver that scares you. With the way they play and how well coached they are, if they had weapons in the passing game, I think they'd be right up there with New England, you know, challenging for the division. But you can't, you know, the game has changed. Bill Parcells won two Super Bowls with the Giants a long time ago with a power running game and no needs at receiver. With the rules favoring the receivers now in the NFL, you know, the NFL loves passing. And look at the Patriots using the spread formations all the time. The rules favor the passing game. So Parcells' mindset about how you build the championship back in the 80s and 90s is different now. And I think that he's pushed back the need for wide receivers and tight ends too far, and they better address it next offseason if they want to compete in this division.
Good stuff. Dan Lieberfeld, Jets Confidential. Dan, thanks for spending some time with us today. Safe travel up this way on Sunday, and we'll see you then.
Okay, John, anytime.
You bet. Thank you very much. Dan Lieberfeld again from Jets Confidential. You can pick up his stuff online, nyj.scout.com, part of the scout.com network, and that's where he gets all of his nuggets of information from Jets camp and practices throughout the course of the week. All right, let's pause here for a timeout again. Web radio. Yeah, thank you.
I'm into nuggets, y'all.
Nice timing on that one. That was a pretty good call up by you. That's pretty quick. Web radio.
It's not my first rodeo. Popular to, contrary,
you know, right
contrary
right
to popular there. Belief of the PFW guys.
It was right there on the tip of your fingertip. You must have known I was going to say nugget, you know? So what can
you're
I
predictable.
You? Yeah, thank you. Thank
it's
you.
Like knowing when I should say, all right, John, say it now.
And that is another good for another. Yeah, okay, gotcha. Anyway, web radio at Patriots.com. God, I hope I get a chance to say that a lot this Sunday, you know?
Me too.
That would be good, wouldn't it? That would really be good. It would be good for everybody. I think we need, what's a good way to term this? I think we need a cleansing of the palate or an enema. One of
Why don't you go get a drink of water?
Talking about the team. One or the other. We've got to flush some things out here, so let's hope that that can happen on Sunday. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 by phone. We'll pause here for another timeout, and then we'll get into Roderick Boone from Newsday coming up inside the playbook.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. What I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday. Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Inside the Playbook for a Wednesday here. I'm John Rook, and we'll get into Roderick Boone from Newsday here in just a couple of moments. In the meantime, time for your emails, webradio@patriots.com, or your phone calls, 508-543-7482. Greg sends this one. He says, everyone seems to be writing this team off. It took Denver overtime at home to beat the Patriots, and Brady never got the ball in overtime. We pushed the Colts to the brink, and it took everything they had to beat us. I think by the end of the season we go 12-4, and no one wants to play New England in the playoffs. They will get better. That's certainly, I think, a prevalent attitude and prevalent feeling that I kind of sense here, Greg, even from people that, you know, suggested that maybe the better thing to do on Sunday would have been to punt the ball rather than to go for it on 4th-and-2 at your own 28-yard line. Going 12-4 at this stage of the game, though, I think you realize it would be a monumental task when you have not only this game this weekend, but then you have the Saints, then you have to play at Miami, which traditionally is not an easy place for New England to play. You've got an ever-improving Carolina team. You've got a Jacksonville team that's certainly capable. And, oh, yeah, you're going to end the season at Houston, where a team might be literally playing for its playoff lives for the first time in franchise history. That seems to me like to be an awful lot of pitfalls. And I hate to rain on your parade, but all I'm trying to do is kind of balance it out a little bit here and show you that, quite frankly, there's a long road to go. And I'm not so certain that 12 wins is reachable at this stage of the game. As we mentioned, Roderick Boone from Newsday covers the New York Jets, and he joins us here inside the Playbook. Roderick, John Rook here in New England, and I hope everything's well with you today. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me, John.
You got it. First and foremost, Rex Ryan had a little bit of a, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the program, but I'm interested in your point of view as to, you know, what really Rex Ryan is all about. And he, you know, got a little emotional, talking to his team the other day. Was that really Rex, or did you get a sense that maybe that was another ploy like we saw back in week 2?
No, it really was Rex, and this is what I'll say about that. He actually addressed that situation today, just a few minutes ago. Rex is an emotional guy, whether it's a fiery, passionate guy who has a, you know, a confident, brash, spiel about him. He's a guy who basically believes in himself, believes in his abilities. So what that was wasn't a boo-hoo-hoo, woe is me, everything has come crashing down after 3-0 start. That wasn't what that was about. It was more of a passionate, I love you guys so much, I want to win this thing so bad, I want to get it turned around the way it's supposed to be. That was more of the reason why he got a couple of tears coming down his face. But it wasn't like he was out there, you know, embarrassed at what's going on. He just wants it so, so bad, and he wanted to come out and have such a great game this week against the Patriots that he wants the people to, he wants the players to basically see how much he loves him and how much he wants him to go out there and play well for him this week. So it's been blown up as it always has in New York, you know, but he made fun of himself today. He came out with a box of Kleenex tissues to kind of make fun of himself. I mean, that's just the way he is. He knows that people sometimes take things a little bit too seriously in this market, but he wants to go out there really and just show the guys how much he cares about them. That's really what that was all about.
Could it be that maybe even he and or this team are a victim of their early season success right now?
You know what? It's funny you mentioned that, John, because actually I wrote that in today's paper.
I read that in today's paper. How about that?
Thank you. And usually it's a commentary, obviously, that the beat writers don't get a chance to actually write stuff like that. But I felt it was kind of something that had to be written because, you're right. I mean, I think, look, with a rookie head coach, a rookie quarterback, a new system coming in, some players coming in on defense, key players, Bart Scott, Jim Leonard, Mark Douglas. I mean, it usually takes a while for these things to all mesh together. And like I said, when you add a rookie coach, rookie quarterback in there, it just makes it that much more difficult to get this thing kind of going where it should be in terms of winning the championship. But to get up to a 3-0 start, people were so happy, so elated with what was going on that they didn't really see this team's flaws. And the flaws have been magnified the last couple of weeks here that they have a quarterback who is learning on the job. He has the talent to be successful, but he's still a rookie quarterback in the NFL. And despite what people say about Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco last year, as you know, being around the NFL as long as you have, it's not very common for a quarterback to come in and play the way those guys played last year. Mm-hmm. So in this market, people get high and low real easily. So that 3-0 start, in my mind, actually hurt these guys because people thought they were probably better than what they really are.
Yeah, I kind of got that sense as well, to be honest with you. And I also know that certainly, injuries have played a factor into it. You got off to a great start, largely because there was a lot of emotion. You had a new coach. He's appealing to the season ticket base to turn out and to be noisy. And so everybody's feeling good about the Jets, and all of a sudden, it's kind of come back down to earth a little bit. Maybe this team is a little bit closer to being what everybody thought it would be before the season started, and you add into that some of the injuries. I mean, I know for a fact that the Jets can't underscore the loss of Chris Jenkins defensively. I know that's been huge.
No, you're right. I mean, I think that's something that people forget about. Now, he was out there, Jenkins was, for a couple of those losses, but since he's gone down in that Bills game, I mean, you're right. It's just one of those things where he's just obviously missed so much because he just takes two guys on every play.
Yeah.
Plus, he classes the pocket. He's out in the run game. So, as we saw against the Jaguars this past week, Maurice Jones-Drew had 55 yards on the first drive of the game alone, pretty much straight up the gut, just right through the middle of that defense, just which wouldn't happen, obviously, if Jenkins is there. So, you're right. I think people forget just how much that guy means to his defense, and you can't replace him. You can plug people in there. I mean, Howard Green's been okay. Sonny Poulos's been okay. Mike DeVito's been okay. But they're not Chris Jenkins. Chris Jenkins is a freak of nature. He's a big, powerful guy who commands double teams. He has great athleticism. He's a player that pretty much you just don't find in the NFL with his talent, size, and strength. It just doesn't happen that often.
Give us that in your estimation, Roderick. What has been a pleasant surprise for this Jets team defensively?
It's a good question. I mean, I probably would have to say one player that people probably have not really heard much about is Mike DeVito. I mean, he's a guy who's a reserve defensive lineman, yes, but he makes plays that go under the radar. I mean, he had a big fumble recovery this past week against Maurice Jones during the goal line. He's one of those guys who gives this line defensive depth, but he's not a household name. I also will throw out David Harris. David Harris is having a great season this year. He had a little bit of injuries last year, a little bit banged up. I think he missed about 8 games or so last year. But this year, he's playing lights out. He leads the team in tackles. He's up there in sacks. He has an interception. I mean, David Harris has been a beast this year. So without him, I'm not really sure where they would be at all because he just makes plays pretty much in every game. And he can rush the passer. He can play the running back coming across the formation. He's been a great, great player for them this year. And without him, I have no idea where they'd be on defense right now.
Well, then let's flip it to the other side on offense for a moment, just because I think most everybody certainly sees the well-chronicled up-and-down season that Mark Sanchez has had at quarterback, which I can't say is all that terribly surprising, considering the fact that he is a rookie. Certainly you can see a lot of the promise that he has, and I know the Patriots got a full view of that back in Week 2 during that 16-9 win by the Jets. That having been said, why is it a struggle now, especially when you bring someone like Braylon Edwards into the mix?
You know what? That's a good question. I think the biggest thing right now with Mark Sanchez is he's not going through his reads fast enough still. Like, for example, on the first play of the game last week against the Jaguars, they came out with a play-action fake, roll out to the left, and he had Cotchery wide open on the left side. But he didn't throw the ball to him on time. So by the ball not being there on time, the defender made a play, got the interception, and before you know it, you know, Rasheed Matthews is going back and running in the opposite direction. So the two-point conversion to Braylon Edwards. Braylon basically said he should have caught the pass. And as a big-time receiver, he's right. But really, the ball was a little bit late. The ball should have been there a little bit earlier. So the big thing with Sanchez right now is he's not getting the ball to receivers at the right moment. He still has to work on his timing, his reads. He's just up and down like you would expect for a quarterback who's a first-year guy, who didn't play much in college. He's just not there right now. He shows you flashes one game. Next game he goes back to kind of being a rookie. So he's up and down the way you kind of would feel that he would be this year. I just think, again, that hot start where he won 3 straight games from the first rookie quarterback ever to win his first 3 games at the start of the season.
Yeah.
Those kind of things right now coming back to kind of bite him because he had such success earlier, people thought he would just come in and be a world beater right away, which, as we've seen, is not the case right now.
Does he have the support he needs right now to be an effective NFL quarterback, or is there still, in your estimation, more work to do by Rex Ryan and his coaches and his scouts and all that stuff?
I think it's a combination of both. I think he has the support staff to get the job done, but also believe that he has to do a better job of helping him out. Sometimes they go to the pass a little bit too much, and they don't run the ball enough, sometimes it seems like. And, again, that's where it comes back to the coaches. If you have a rookie quarterback out there who you don't want to put it all on his shoulders, the run game must be used a little bit more. And sometimes the Jets don't use it enough from my perspective, and they don't use Sanchez's play-action ability because, in my mind, the guy is a great ball faker. He has a great play-action fakes. He carries out execution fakes on pretty much every play he does, whether it's a bootleg, a fake bootleg, or whatever. So in my mind, he has to be able to use that part of his game a little bit more, and that starts with the coaching aspect of it. But in terms of the support staff around him, you know, he has people around him to make sure that he stays on the straight and narrow. I mean, just I can tell you one thing for a fact. He doesn't do many media interviews. He talks to us really twice a week. Today, on Wednesdays, he talks to us, and after the game on Sundays. Beyond that, he doesn't really do any other interviews. So,
is that because of the demand?
It is because of demand, partly, but also because they want him to just focus solely on becoming an NFL quarterback,
okay,
making sure his time is spent wisely, studying in the film room, in the weight room, with the coaches, whatever. They want to make sure he maximizes all his time. So, again, we don't speak to him that much, but twice a week. So in their mind, doing those kind of things, they believe, will help them out in the long run.
Mm-hmm. I certainly think that we've seen enough of Mark Sanchez to know that he's going to be a formidable opponent for, you know, perhaps years to come. Where does this Jets offense right now need to improve in order to be a consistent contender?
They've got to sustain more drives. It may sound dumb. They've been able to score points kind of when they've had to. But there are times when they go three and out a little bit too much from my perspective. They got to get better on short yardage, third and one, third and two. Those parts of the game are not clicking right now. And they also have to be able to get more of the receivers involved on a game-to-game basis. One game, the top guy could be Cotchery. One game, it could be Edwards. One game, it could be Keller. That's fine. Yeah, that's the NFL. We know that. But they don't seem to week in and week out, have enough people there making plays, in my mind, at that position. So if they can get more plays from the wide receivers, if they can be able to be better on short yardage, third and one, third and two, third and three, and make sure they can actually get out there and complete and you know, get these first downs, get a drive going, I think they'll be okay. But, you know, again, they have to go back to the run game a little bit more. Sometimes the run games work so well, but they get away from it. It's almost like they sometimes they kind of, they fool themselves. Yeah. It's so good. Oh, let's try a little pass here. Well, the pass may not work, but a run may have worked there. So there's a lot of issues going on right now with this team. I know they've lost, four games on the last play of the game, per se. But, again, it comes down to little small details. And right now, they just aren't getting the job done in that department.
Those little small details, as you referred to, are they the fault of the players or the coaches?
That's a good question. I would say probably really from the players. The coaches can only do so much to prepare a team. If you prepare a team and tell them where they should be, the players must be the ones who actually execute. And I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Against Jacksonville this past week, in the first half, you saw Maurice Jones-Drew, again, run wild. Maurice Jones-Drew is a good player. There's no doubt about that. But the Jets had a gaggle of missed tackles. And that's not the coach's fault. The coach put him in the right place to make a play. They didn't make the play when the play was there to be made.
Yeah.
So if you shore up those little areas, the making sure you're in the right rushing lane, making sure you get to the player and make the tackle, making sure when you actually are covering your receiver that you don't fall down to make a tackle attempt. I mean, those are things the players are doing right now, and the coaches are not at fault for that. It's the players who are not making the plays when they have to be made. It's really on them at this moment in time.
Roderick Boone covers the Jets from Newsday with us here in the playbook. Roderick, I know there was a bit of a coaching change recently within the last couple of days. Kerry Loughlin, defensive line coach, left. What was that all about? Can you shed any light on that?
You know what? There's, from what I understand, there seem to be a little bit of issues there for a number of reasons. One of them, I think, was philosophical. I think there are times when maybe Loughlin's style and his approach didn't mesh with what the Jets were looking for. And people have to remember that he was mostly been a college coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is really his first foray into the NFL.
Didn't he have a long-time relationship with Rex?
Exactly. Yes, he has. I think the guy, 20 years ago at Morehead College, in Kentucky, they were on the same coaching staff.
Okay.
So what it was Rex getting his opportunity and wanted to give a guy who hasn't had a chance, giving him a chance to show what he can do at this level. And as we've seen sometimes, whether it be Steve Spurrier or whoever else, when you go from college to the NFL, it's a different game. Not only is it a different game, we're dealing with different egos. In college, you pretty much are like the player's father. Whatever you say goes. In the NFL, these guys are making a lot of money, and they're men. You have to approach them a different way to get what you want to get out of them. I also believe there are a couple issues in substitution lines and changes that just were costing the Jets penalties. And ultimately, he's not a scapegoat. He's not going to be a scapegoat. It's not all his fault. But they just felt with the way things were going, they just couldn't let it happen anymore. So a change had to be made, and that's why they decided to go ahead and let Kerry Loughlin go on
Monday. I was just going to ask. I mean, it was a difference in philosophy. Obviously, the head coach, what he wants to do is going to go, and I was just surprised to see that simply because there was a history between the two guys.
You're right. But, again, I think what happens sometimes with these things are you just really don't know. You hope that when you bring a guy in and you give him not free reign, because Rex is in control of the entire defense. He's a defensive coach, essentially. But with the way Loughlin was running things, I guess it just wasn't the way – it wasn't going the way Rex would have liked. And at this point in time, with the way things are going, people have been critical of Rex here, saying he's not had enough of a hands-on approach. He hasn't, basically been a total head coach. Well, I know from the defensive side of the ball, which is his side of the ball technically, mm-hmm. but it's a move that had to be made. If this guy wants to be a head coach and say, this is my football team, I want it run the way I want it to be run, and the guy who is the coach doesn't see eye to eye with him, then he has to go. And so that's what happened in that situation is they didn't see eye to eye the way they would have liked to, and instead of actually trying to conform and change things on the fly now, they just felt it was better to go ahead and just part ways.
Can you put your finger on any one thing philosophically where they differed?
Not really. I just think really what it really boils down to is he was a college coach, first real crack in the NFL, and his style didn't work.
Gotcha.
You know, I just think that's just really just it. It just didn't really work the way they hoped to. And instead of actually letting it continue to go on and possibly even get worse, they just decided to go ahead and just end it while it's still a good chance that things won't get any worse, so to speak.
Gotcha. All right, well, while we have you for another minute here, then we'll certainly be remiss if we didn't get your thoughts on the matchup this week, the fact that the Jets are, you know, coming up to Foxborough, the rematch of way back in week two. Certainly you're probably aware the Patriots players have kind of had this one circled just because of the way the Jets had built this game up way back in week two as being a September version of the Super Bowl. And but whatever, it worked for them. It certainly worked. So where do you think this game will be decided on Sunday?
You know what? I think it will be decided essentially by Tom Brady and the offense. The Jets defense has not got it done this year. Technically, right now, they're number three overall in the NFL in total defense. But that means nothing to me because you can be the worst-ranked team in the league in defense, but if it's fourth down and 10 and you're up by three, you got to make a stop. If you make that stop, then you're a good defense. The Jets have not made those stops this year when they absolutely had to have them. And I just can't see them stopping Tom Brady and company when they absolutely have to. Like you said, in week two, Tom Brady was still rusty. I mean, he missed two touchdown passes, from my recollection, that he should have easily thrown. I believe one was to Randy Moss that he just overthrew him. And they didn't have Russ Welker out there in week two. And we know how big he is to the offense for the Patriots. Julian Edelman did a great job as a fill-in. Yes, he did, but he's not Russ Welker. So with that being said, with Brady being back on this game, with Welker being back out there, with, like you said, the Patriots circling this game, like the last, whatever, eight weeks, whatever it's been, this game is going to be a tough game for the Jets to win in my mind. I just can't see them doing it because they just have too many variables going in the wrong direction for them. I just think the Patriots will emerge on top in this game on Sunday.
Does this cook the Jets in potential for playoffs or postseason this year?
Oh, most definitely. And actually, John, I think they're really done now because they already have five losses. They've lost to Jacksonville. They're kind of barely breathing in terms of the playoff hunt. And as you know, the AFC is just tough, as it always is. You're going to need probably at least 10 wins to get in the playoffs, which means you have to have six losses. So the Jets have no margin for error right now. And with the way they played, despite them being all their losses for the most part, I just can't see them going 6-1 in these last seven games. And if they lose to the Patriots on Sunday, they'll be 4-6. They go 6-0 the last six games of the season. Not hard ones. They have to play the Falcons, the Panthers, the Colts. Those are not easy games. They may sound easy. I mean, but obviously the Colts are not an easy team, but the Panthers and Carolina, and they got to play the Bengals in Week 17. I mean, schedule isn't very easy for these guys. So the Jets are pretty much toast now, but if they lose on Sunday, they're absolutely cooked for sure, no doubt about it.
I think the Patriots learned how resilient, if not tough, the Colts can be this past week.
Exactly. So, look, I mean, there's a lot of talk up there about that fourth down play. I'm sure I actually watched the game myself and was kind of wondering what was going on there. But
What was your opinion on it?
You know what? When I watched the game, I was really kind of miffed. I know what he's trying to do because in his mind he's probably saying, one first down here, the game is over. And I don't want to give the ball back to Peyton Manning and company. But at that point, you got to put it on your defense, man. You just have to.
Yeah.
You better make a guy drive 80 yards for the winning score as opposed to 30 yards, right? So I know he's trying to do, but it just, in my mind, wasn't a smart move. It just showed really almost a lack of just I guess, competence. I mean, he's a great coach. We all know this. He won Super Bowls. He was great here in New York with the Giants. But that move was a head-scratcher. And, I know why he tried to do it, but it didn't make very, very much sense at all to me.
Yeah, I have to admit, I share your opinion. I have been derided for that somewhat this week, but that's okay. That's to be expected, you know? Well,
that's
you know,
it
fans,
how it goes.
hey, Roderick, fans around here, you know, they are, you know, in Bill we trust for the most part. And I understand that. I get that whole mindset. I understand why fans are like that. That's what makes them fans. I'll be honest with you, though. We did a little unofficial poll yesterday, and it was split right down the middle on whether to punt the ball or to go for the play, which tells me that we do have some fans out there that also did exactly what you and I did. They questioned the sanity of that particular move.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, look. Again, Bill Belichick, man, he knows more football. He's probably forgotten more football than I know right now.
Right.
So, I mean, the guy is a great coach. We can't dispute that. But at that point in the game, when you're up by 6 points and they don't need a field goal to tie the game, a touchdown wins it for them, you got to punt the ball right there. You just have to. If they go 80 yards, you shake his hand and say, you know what, you're the man. You beat us. But to give him the ball 30 yards away with a minute and change left, it just made no sense whatsoever. I didn't get that. But like you said, fans are fans. They love their coaches and their players. Bill Belichick is a staple up there in New England. So they're going to back him. But if you're smart, you have that deal going on in this game, that was not a great move on his part at all.
Roderick Boone again from Newsday. Roderick, great to visit with you. Thanks so much for the time. I look forward to seeing you around here on Sunday afternoon.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me on, John. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Roderick Boone again from Newsday. Get his stuff on Newsday.com as he covers the Jets beat. Very good. And great insight, honest insight. That's what I love about most of these guys that we get onto the program here.
He seems wicked smart.
He is wicked smart. He is very wicked smart. He's opinionated, which I like. Which you don't, and he brought that out just a couple of moments ago, Doc, just because, you know, he's a beat writer. And beat writers don't normally get a chance to give their opinions of things. He had a chance to do that in one of his stories that was published on Newsday Today, and that's why I think he sounded like he relished that opportunity. You know, there's a difference between covering the beat and being a columnist. A columnist gives you opinion that causes you to think, while a beat writer or a sports writer, per se, just gives you the facts and just gives you the details as they occur.
Just the facts, ma'am, right?
Different things. What's that?
Just the facts, ma'am, right?
Yeah, just the facts. That's right. And so when a writer, a beat writer, gets a chance to give his opinion, he's all giddy. And frankly, Roderick has very good energy, and I'd love to have him back on the show again anytime, and we can talk about anything other than the Patriots and Jets, because it sounds to me like he'd be, you know, a very entertaining guy just to, you know, sit down and have an adult beverage with, you know. So that's good. That part's all good. Let me finish up here on the program with another email that we got, and then, of course, we'll let you know what we got coming up here in just a couple of moments on web radio. This one comes from Brett, who says, the hallmark of this team has always been that they are able to put what's done behind them and focus on this week. This is the most mentally tough team in the NFL, and I have no doubt they will come out and take it out on the Jets and humiliate them. The crowd will cheer louder this Sunday than ever before. Forget the Colts. The Saints aren't here. Focus on the Jets. Well said, Brett. Well said. And with that, we say hello to Christina Acra. Hi, Christina. Is she there?
I'm here now.
There you
We're
are.
We're always slow on that one, aren't we?
Well, you know, they got to push the button in. And you
it's
know,
my
sure
fault.
That,
I'm multitasking because you're in your basement, so I'm
Jason's
trying to get her set up and
too
hit
much
buttons.
At once. Too much at once for a Wednesday. How's it going?
It's going great. It's going great. What do you think about, you know, everything that's transpired over the last, you know, 72 hours and the fact that it's obviously going to be tough, I think, for a lot of people to sort of turn ahead the clock? I think it helps that it's the Jets. If it were, say,
definitely,
if it were Carolina, I think we'd be having a real tough time this week.
Yeah, they have no time to dwell on it. They can't. I mean, this game actually means something as far as the division. But that one, you know, I think more importantly is everybody needs to look at the bigger picture of the fact that they – squandered away a win that they were very close to, regardless of a fourth and two or whatever you want to, you know, whatever you want to linger on. They didn't win the game when they had complete control the whole time for the most part. So that, if anything, is what's going to linger on to the rest of the season, that they've got to get these wins, you know. So kind of a bigger picture. That's what we're trying to go on.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, and I think everybody has to realize that it's time to kind of move on here and see if we can't at least think about the Jets, if not emotionally get behind, you know, what's going to happen. And like the emailer just said, frankly, I hope the crowd is louder than ever, because
yeah,
I think the guys on the team would actually appreciate that. A lot of people think, oh, pros are different from some college guys, but let me guarantee one thing here. Those guys hear it.
They
feel the energy of the crowd. We all do. It's all a better environment when that energy is really going, and I think that's something that, you know, that fans can do to actually be a part of this and help turn this around a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for the Jets because I think that the Patriots are just going to completely unleash their frustrations on them on the field this weekend, and it's a good thing. I think definitely they'll use it to their advantage. Anytime they come off of a loss like this, don't they normally use it to their advantage
usually.
In the best way they can?
Yeah, so. They don't lose two games in a row.
Right.
They usually don't. I mean, that's certainly been part of the unique aspect of this team is their ability to focus. All right, we got Shop Talk coming up in a couple of minutes.
We do. We have some pre-holiday season sales going on at the Pro Shop. We're going to talk about them, some great ways to buy gifts, some get some deals before the holidays because they are right around the corner, literally. So listen in, everybody. Stay with us.
Awesome. Sounds like a plan. And I'll see you this weekend.
See you this weekend. Can't wait.
You got it.
See ya.
Christina Acra, Shop Talk coming up right here on Patriots.com radio. Wraps up our program for today, and thanks to Dan Lieberfeld from Jets Confidential, Roderick Boone from Newsday, and, of course, Eric Scalavino from PFW for sitting in. Mike Reese will be joining Eric Scalavino tomorrow, along with, of course, Mike Reese, formerly from the Boston Globe and now with ESPNBoston.com, and along with Mia Harris from WFAN in New York and Russell Baxter from ESPN, the NFL research coordinator that we visit with every Thursday inside the playbook. So it is a packed program tomorrow. Please give Eric your undivided attention as I have some travel duties again tomorrow down in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. But I'll be back again same Pat's time, same Pat's channel next week. And, of course, around for the game on Sunday. Shop Talk coming up next.